It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse. Saturday morning, August 7th. Back for more here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Sports Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers with Bruce Levine. I am David Haw here until 11 o'clock. Here again to talk about another White Sox and Cubs crosstown series. Bruce, what a week it has been. We talked last Saturday, was dominated by the big trades on both sides of town. The last week that transpired, a lot of stuff going on. But last night, yesterday, that turned into last night, the Cubs lose 8-6 to the White Sox in a game that got very dramatic and very interesting. From the eighth inning on, 4 hours and 27 minutes worth of fun.
Yeah, the 16-inch softball rules with the man on second base always makes it interesting, doesn't it, David?
Bruce, where else could you have a leadoff two-run home run?
Exactly. Thank you for proving my point. Just the most disgusting rule that probably ever come into baseball. That is something that I'm never going to get used to, and I hope goes away. But nonetheless, a lot of drama, as you said, David, over the last week with the trades made by the Cubs and Sox individually and together, and the culmination of some of that yesterday with Craig Kimbrel on the mound facing his old team and pitching in the eighth rather than the ninth inning. So we have a lot to get into. But again, this is Inside the Clubhouse. David Haw, Bruce Levine, every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball. And our number is 312-644-6767. That's our text and phone line to get in with the show anytime in the next 2 hours. And David, where would you like to begin today?
Well, I think that every Saturday it feels like we're resetting the context for both teams and kind of hitting the reset button for the week that was. And it feels as if to me, Bruce, and correct me if I'm wrong, and this is why you're here, because you're talking to these managers and players every single day. It feels like we spent the last week sort of sifting through the rubble of what feels like the rock bottom of the Ricketts era, the time where you sort of pick up the pieces. And during the first rebuild, if you will, there was a sense of something special was happening, perhaps because Theo Epstein was here and he was gracing us with his presence, and there was going to be, you know, it was all going to be worth the wait. I don't know that you have that feeling of hope yet. Meanwhile, on the South side with the White Sox, they haven't been hitting that much. They have had their pitching moments. And yet, with Brian Goodwin around, is a reminder with two of game-winning hits in the last week that maybe something special is going on in the South side, the perfectly imperfect season the White Sox are putting together.
Well, let's start with the Cubs and what you said about the Ricketts era rock bottom. I do not look at it that way at all. I think rock bottom was 2011 when the transfer from Jim Hendry's era as running the Cubs to Theo Epstein and to Hoyer and the new people coming in. That was rock bottom, and it didn't get to rock bottom probably until 12 or 13 when they started to strip it down and then build it back up. And then you saw the quick ascension in 2015 to a contending team for the next 6 years. But when you look at the same era that produced a brand new ballpark where the old ballpark was, when you see a new television station that's owned by the Ricketts family and the Cubs in place, when you see revenues that are coming in, I don't see rock bottom being there for right now, because I think the difference, David, is that the Chicago Cubs, although have traded away some of their iconic players, they have the ability to turn this around a lot quicker. Now, we're not going to see that here in these last 2 months, where we're seeing some unidentifiable
what
players.
Are we seeing, Bruce?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. We'll get to that. But in reality, the revenue stream and the understanding that they don't want to be bad for a long period of time is much different now than the job that I think Epstein and Hoyer took on in 2011-12.
Let me offer a distinction then and clarify. When I say rock bottom, it does maybe tend to generalize or maybe overstate what this past week represented. But I guess from a, you know, when you're looking at it from a fan perspective, I think emotionally you could say this is as low that a Cubs fan has felt, and I don't want to speak on behalf of them, so you can let us know, 312-644-6767. Bruce, I think with the departure of some beloved figures who did so much for this franchise, coupled with the fact that that got a little messy on the way out and a little bit more public acrimony than Jed Hoyer may have wanted, it feels like this is what other franchises went through. This is what the Cubs, you know, were always going to avoid. And so rock bottom may be emotionally, if not from a baseball perspective, because your points are well taken. The Cubs can spend their way out of this if they so choose, and they're more equipped to do that now quicker than they were in 2011.
You know, I feel for the fans just like you do, David. You know, the he said, she said of they made an offer, but it wasn't enough. When was that offer made? How serious were they? You've hurt my feelings. All that's going to go away by November, okay? So once free agency starts, the season's over with, you're going to see some of those guys talked to by the Cubs. You're going to see some new people talked to by the Cubs. They're not going to be sitting on their hands and their wallet in 2022, because that doesn't, even from a business perspective, David, that doesn't serve their purpose, okay? They have new people watching on their own station. They have a ballpark and a franchise that has 27,000 season ticket holders. They have built a lot of equity in the neighborhood. They are able to do a lot of things that they weren't able to do before. The Ricketts have bought into this neighborhood and area and built it up. So from all of that, It doesn't speak to me or what I see at all as it's to their benefit that they're not good. Okay, I think there's that feeling, and correct me if I'm wrong, David. And again, as we say, it's your show, 312-644-6767 out there. It doesn't look to me at all that it would benefit the Chicago Cubs or the Ricketts family at all by not being competitive.
I don't think they're headed in that direction. I would agree with you. I don't think that tanking makes as much sense now as they thought that it made then, and they could justify going in that direction. So, yes, that is not going to be the course that the Cubs hopefully go down. So while they are determining what direction they want to go, and while we are debating what direction they should, meanwhile, the White Sox keep winning. Now, I know it's not been a great stretch, and I say keep winning, and it's, I guess, a 24-hour term, because they have not been playing well, Bruce, but they've been getting lifts from guys like Brian Goodwin, who came through again yesterday. Let's switch to the White Sox and what we saw from this team that is, I think, when you look at it overall, the one thing you can say consistently the White Sox are is resilient, and we saw it again yesterday. They have a lead.
Craig Kimbrough, ironically enough, blows the lead. They pick up Craig Kimbrough with a home run by Brian Goodwin, a leadoff two-run home run shot, as we pointed out. And this White Sox team gets to celebrate. That was a long game, Bruce, but it was a fun one, especially if you're a Sox fan.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, the Cub fans had their times to cheer in their own ballpark as well. I mean, normally I go down in the last two innings of each game and sit right next to the dugout to go on the field to do a post-game interview when the Cubs win. And there was a fair mixture. I mean, I would say it was probably 70-30 Cub fans, but when the White Sox got it going and got back on top, some of the Cub fans had left, and you heard a large contingency of Chicago White Sox fans enjoying themselves at the ballpark. I think that's a Cub and Sox fans' greatest fear is, the celebration and taking over of the cheering right. in the ballpark by the fan from the other team. I think that's one of the things. Worst fan experiences I think there is out there when that happens to you. But nonetheless, it was an exciting game, as you said, albeit the horrible rules that they have in place. And, it was great theater from the beginning of the day when you and I were standing there talking to Craig Kimbrell, talking about walking back into Wrigley Field as a Chicago White Sox player just a week after being traded, to when he got on the mound and even the outs were loud outs. You saw a guy pitching in the eighth inning that we hadn't seen all year. That was without question his worst outing of the season.
And Bruce, that was what the irony was, is that it was great to get out to the park yesterday for that, and it was great to see you in person as well. And we're standing there talking and hearing Craig Kimbrell talk about the week that he has endured and the fact that he was traded across town. He could relate to the feelings of both Sox fans and Cubs fans, and Cubs fans were gracious to him, when he was coming out of the bullpen, and then maybe not so much when he was leaving the field. But what a week it has been for him. And ironically enough, he came in the eighth inning after, before the game, being asked about the differences in adrenaline and other things about pitching in the eighth versus pitching in the ninth.
Obviously, it's a little different. The energy can be a little different depending on where you're playing and what the atmosphere is like. But at the end of the day, you still got to get those outs. I had a little bit of practice doing it last year, so that definitely helps out.
Bruce, Craig Kimbrell's a Hall of Fame closer. I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame setup guy. Is that ridiculous to say? And I loved your tweet where you referred to Craig Kimbrell as the White Sox setup man.
Well, he was yesterday, and that will be his job at least half the time from what we've been told by Tony La Russa and how he wants to do this. The other part of the time, he will be closing. There's supposed to be reversal of roles from game to game, and depending on who's available and who's not, who's been used the day before. So it can get clunky along the way. It's going to be interesting to watch. But nonetheless, he did have this experience last year when he was not the closer of the Cubs. I think people forget about the fact that he was not that guy, that he was a setup man basically from the second or third game of that 60-game season till the end of the year. And the last month, he had really settled in where I think he had 13 consecutive outings without giving up a run, and it continued into 2021 here where he's just been totally dominant up until yesterday. So I think he does have that experience and he can do well in that job. But he admitted, right in that soundbite that we played, David, the adrenaline is different in the eighth inning. It just is. You're used to getting it all together. You have a Red Bull or you don't, and you're just all set for, closing out that other team and walking off as the victor with your club. Very different adrenaline, very different approach, but same pitcher. So those of us who haven't played or played at that level, I don't think we quite understand, though. Well, you still have to get three outs. Why would it be different? It is different. I don't think there's any question about it.
And so when you have somebody that has mastered the art of the ninth inning, a guy who is possibly one day headed to Cooperstown and will go in as a closer,
And I'm asking this because it's a valid question, especially in light of yesterday. This isn't recency bias. If the White Sox having these discussions, when Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams agreed the one guy they wanted to target at the trade deadline was Craig Kimbrel, do you think they said, we want Craig Kimbrel to pitch the eighth inning? I mean, he's going in as he's a Hall of Fame closer, Bruce, and I understand that with due respect to Liam Hendricks, who is terrific, but Liam Hendricks is a walking can of Red Bull. He could get motivated on the dreariest of days. And I think that his flexibility, not to use it against him, but it certainly is something that you feel like he is more pliable as a reliever, in my mind, than Craig Kimbrel. So if it's not broken with Craig Kimbrel, why would you try to fix it? Because putting him in the eighth inning gets you days like yesterday.
So you've had a Cocker Spaniel puppy, and I'm not comparing people to dogs, but just emotional experiences. And you've had a Cocker Spaniel for 9 years, and you and your wife and family decide to get a Cocker Spaniel puppy to come in. The natural tendency is to say, we love that puppy and we're going to pay more attention to him. But you can't forget the 9 years of love that you've had with that first dog. And, the point here is this. Hendricks has gotten you to this point. You have a three-year commitment to him for $54 million. He is also an all-star closer, just like Kimbrel is. So you don't set him aside and say, you know what, you're not as important anymore coming in. You're still the guy. We are just fortifying the bullpen with somebody who is just as good, hopefully, as you are. And this is going to help us be able to dominate the playoffs and go and win a World Series. So the thinking is good. It's solid thinking. The problem is that when you have two guys who are used to doing it and are on the top of their game, backing down from that last inning is difficult, and it might take a little time. I think it might stay a little clunky. In Hendricks' case, David, he's used to pitching all kinds of different innings. He wants to pitch six innings. He said, you know, if you put him in the seventh and he pitches the seventh and eighth, every day he's the happiest guy in the world. So I don't think there's an ego problem between the two guys. I think it might be an adrenaline issue.
I think that's probably a good way to put it. And, Bruce, I'm more of a golden retriever guy, and as long as all my dogs are happy, I'm happy too. Let's go out to the Score listener line. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter. Beat the books. That's where we find George in River Grove. Good morning, George. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
How are you guys today?
Great.
Great. It's a beautiful thing. So here's the way I see it. The Cubs and their hotshot players, they had an ugly divorce. And it takes two to tango, so both sides are at fault. On the one hand, the Cubs should have seen this coming. You know, they didn't have a plan B. They didn't have people that they could bring in to back up this, you know, and to just launch them all and just say to the Cub fans, oh, well, we'll get them next year. You know, there's going to be some blowback for that, number one. And number two, the players, all these multimillionaire players, you know, when things are going marvelous, everything was wonderful. But then when they started to crap out, they all failed to handle adversity. They are all whining. And at the last thing I want to say is, you have millionaires in a PP contest with other millionaires. Work it out. Don't bother me.
Thanks for the call. Hey, David, some good points. I think it's a good fan perspective of what's going on, which is the most important thing, because you and I, the players, owners, everybody else, you know, we don't have jobs without the fans out there. So you have to pay close attention to their opinion and how they feel. I think you made some good points. You know, again, the Cubs did get here with those players for one part, because they're really good and they helped them win for a long period of time. Getting there in the last year and not knowing that this separation was a big possibility, I think we were all warned about that. And I think that, if anything, those players should have been traded a year or two ago. Now, easy for me to say when they're still contending for the playoffs and winning their division last year, right? So,
right.
There's a lot of revisionist history that can make you right in any of these conversations. All I can say is that it's pretty much the trend in baseball that when you're winning and you have really good players and you have a full house and everybody's pretty happy, that the players are held on to too long. We saw it most recently with Philadelphia in the late in 2008, 2009, 10. We saw it with San Francisco in the middle of 2014 and 15, after they won every other year for that 6-year period. We saw it with the Texas Rangers in 2010 and 11, going to the World Series 2 years in a row. So these things are business and baseball related together. A lot of it has to do with making the fan base happy, keeping them coming into the ballpark, buying the merchandise, falling in love with the players. That's a big part of it. And the other part is, when is separation possible, and do you have that minor league system to replace these players when they're gone? And the answer for the Cubs is no, they didn't, but yes, a week later, they have a lot better looking young players to go forward with.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm David Hall. While we scrutinize the Cubs front office decisions, we will celebrate the White Sox moves. Jeremy Haber, the assistant general manager for the White Sox, is next. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Driven to left. It's deep. It is gone! Brian Goodwin!
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was a highlight. Thank you to NBC Sports Chicago. Yesterday, Brian Goodwin's game-winning home run, Len Casper, on the call for the White Sox. Yes, for the White Sox. And it's time now with Bruce Levine to go to the guest hotline, the Circa, brought to you by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas. That's where we find White Sox assistant general manager Jeremy Haber. Good morning, Jeremy. How are you? Jeremy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How's it going, guys?
Doing well. Probably not as well as you feel this morning. A big victory for the White Sox and against the Cubs in the Crosstown Series. A lot of drama at Wrigley Field. A lot of success to celebrate this year for you. Just let's start there, Jeremy. How would you describe the season to this point for the White Sox from your perspective?
I think it's been incredible what these guys have accomplished. Coming off the shortened COVID year, a year that started with a lot of uncertainty, couldn't be prouder of what the clubhouse has accomplished. Everyone knows we've dealt with injuries just like every other team in baseball. Lots of guys have responded, and several have taken their games to new levels, and I think the excitement that the whole city feels behind the White Sox we share in the front office.
Jeremy, I know you didn't have anything to do with the acquisition of Len Casper on your side, but I do know that you were a strong advocate of bringing in Brian Goodwin. What was your intel that you brought to both Kenny and to Rick, talking about adding Goodwin, and what was the thing you most liked about him?
I think we finally got Brian maybe on our third or fourth try. We talked about him last trade deadline as a possible fit. We chased him this offseason. He elected to sign with another club first, and he's always been a guy we thought could help with our outfield depth. Billy Hamilton's another example of a guy we didn't get on our first try. And there's lots of guys in the office who contribute with that effort to be part of a process that gives us depth when we have inevitable injuries. What Brian and Billy have brought to the club.
Let's not spread too much of the credit elsewhere. We do want to get you a GM job eventually, you know. So it's okay to take some credit here. Go ahead, David.
No, but Jeremy, I think that, you know, it's remarkable when you look at this White Sox team. I think even Steve Stone was alluding to it during the telecast yesterday. You know, when you have a big-ticket free agent, for instance, and you go out and you pursue him and he signs with the team, that's a nod, tip of the cap to the front office. But it's very tricky and a lot more maybe commendable or difficult when you get guys like Goodwin or you get contributors like Billy Hamilton and you find diamonds in the rough or guys who are willing to fit and do what they need to do. What's the pride level when something like that happens compared to the big moves that are made to compare to these other guys who are coming through that might nobody else might have wanted, but you were able to find and get good use out of?
No doubt. I think for me, it's also a testament to the culture that we've built here. As you can imagine, you know, there are, when a guy like Billy Hamilton or Brian Goodwin, players with major league success and a track record, when for whatever reason, you know, the market says that they're going to end up with a minor league deal, they have options. They can play lots of places. And if it wasn't for them, you know, talking with other players around the league and finding out that being in the White Sox clubhouse is a place they might want to be, we wouldn't have a chance. It wouldn't matter what our analysis was and how they could help the club. And so, you know, that to me is a big piece of this. We've turned the culture around. This is a place where veterans want to come.
Jeremy Haber, the assistant general manager of the Chicago White Sox, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David. I'm Bruce. We are with you 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball on The Score every Saturday from 9 to 11. Jeremy, when you talk about what the White Sox were able to do in the last 10 days, take us through a little chronology of making the trade for Hernandez at second base and then having the ability and the resources to pick up Kimbrel.
So our second base pursuit, Bruce, you know, started probably earlier than others because of injuries and the need to backfill that spot. We identified Hernandez as probably one or three or four guys that we thought were a good fit. Obviously, it didn't come together until the end, but he was on a fairly short list from the beginning. With Craig, it was a little later in the process. You know, we knew he would be one of the most sought after relievers, if not players overall, that likely would move this deadline, and kind of anticipated it would come down to the end with him, and couldn't be happier that we were able to add him.
Jeremy, comparisons are inevitable when you play the Cubs, when you share a market like Chicago with the Cubs. And I think that when you see what's happened to the Cubs in the last week, you immediately look at what the White Sox were able to do in locking up some of your young stars long-term with contract extensions, which I think is going to put you in a more enviable spot to avoid the kind of situation the Cubs found themselves in. Not necessarily speaking directly to the Cubs, but generally speaking, how difficult is it to get players to agree that doing this earlier, sooner rather than later, is in their best interest, and why it does ultimately benefit both teams, both sides?
Yeah, so absolutely. So, you know, every player has their own process. Having gone through this several times, you know, none of these conversations are the same. For us, this dates back to the original decision to start and embark on a rebuild. When we first kind of sketched out what that might look like, we knew we had to acquire a deeper talent base, develop that younger core, and then ultimately retain them. If we were going to go through the pain of a multi-year rebuild, we wanted to ensure there was a 5-6 year window on the back end. And Jerry supported that plan from Rick and Kenny from the beginning. I think one thing that really helped us was Tim Anderson kind of making that decision at the beginning of our rebuild to sign one of these extensions. He did so. It was March of 17. We were between the Sale and Quintana deals. He knew he was signing on to a longer, the beginning of a rebuild, and really very forcefully said, this is where I want to be. And every time a player does that, I think it makes it easier for the next guy to make that same decision.
Jeremy, the Yoan Moncada situation is a fascinating one for me as a baseball reporter and a baseball fan, because in Moncada, you have one of the great talents in baseball. I don't think there's any scout or any baseball person I talk to that doesn't agree upon that. And then you see the player going through the tough times last year and having to deal with COVID, which was lingering, unfortunately, for him. And I think we all felt for him. And then coming into 2021, he felt it was behind him, but the clunkiness of his game, even though the great talent is there and it shines on many occasions, it sometimes is strange to watch, because if you look at body language, you can't really tell what's going on with Moncada. What are your observations on Moncada and how to watch this player?
You know, Bruce, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the talent that he has. For me personally, coming off the year he had last year, you know, my goal for him is a full healthy season, and him showing us what he can do over that period. He didn't have that last year, and that to me is the biggest marker of success for him this year, and he's done that. And his talent is such that, you know, you're always, no matter what he does, you might be left wanting more. But for a guy coming off the adversity he faced, to be in the lineup as much as he has, contribute the way that he does at a premium position, he's right on track, Bruce.
You know, Jeremy, when you look around baseball, and it's been interesting, the trade deadline, there are some big names moved. There were some. The prospect currency, I think, changed again, the exchange rate, if you will. Just from your perspective, given your insight into the business and how the Sox were able to maneuver to put themselves in a position to feel like legitimate pennant contenders, how would you describe the most recent trade deadline? Because it was unlike any we have ever seen.
Yeah, it was fun, wasn't it? We all started as fans before we got lucky enough to do this for work, and absolutely, it was, you know, there were several players that got moved, and we enjoyed following it as well. I think every team's trying to do what we did, which is give their clubhouse the best chance to win in October, and I think you had some very clearly defined sellers and equally defined buyers, and that created a nice market for everyone.
Jeremy, when you look at your catching situation, I was under the impression, my own impression, of course, by looking and observing your team, that you might need a veteran catcher to come in. And I guess the knowledge of what you know about your players kind of transcends what I think or what other observers might think, because knowing that you had your star catcher coming back from injury but not knowing when, and then having to trust Collins and Zavala, has worked out extremely well. And the transformation for Zavala to from a minor leaguer to catching arguably the best starting staff in Major League Baseball has been eye-opening to me. Your thoughts on Zavala and how he's handled the situation here?
No, I think it's been great. Dating back to this off season and conversations with Tony and Ethan as they're coming in, we talked a lot about our catching depth. It's something that we prioritized, and we knew there was always a potential for a logjam because we had these upper level catchers, all of which we thought could contribute at the big league level. And it's frustrating for guys at times because they're not getting their chance. And Sebi is a guy that the minor league staff has lauded his defensive work for several years, and we haven't hesitated to know that if we did need someone who could come handle the staff from day one, Sebi could be that guy. So we've seen that. Our minor league coaches have seen that, and you know, given this extended opportunity, White Sox fans now get a chance to see it as well.
Well, congratulations, Jeremy. Enjoy the ride. It looks like the best maybe yet to come, and you guys have really put yourselves in a position to enjoy the, you know, the benefits of your work and positioning to make a run at it with players who you lock up long term and guys who, you know, you find like Brian Goodwin, and I think he's had quite a week. Now he's got to just do it again, right?
That's right. I'll take another one.
Jeremy,
thanks so much for joining us. Have a good week, a good rest of the year, and remember, take a little credit for something once in a while. It doesn't hurt. We know you want to win with the White Sox and be here for a long time, but I'd like to see you in one of those other front offices down the line as well, okay?
Thanks, Bruce. Let's just get a win today.
I hear you.
Jeremy Haber, the White Sox assistant general manager. Bruce is trying to get out of town.
I think it's based on his talent. You know, he has been instrumental, David, in negotiations for signing guys like Mancata, getting involved in other signings like the great signing for Tim Anderson that signed him up for a long period of time. The White Sox. And we've talked about it a little bit before, but it should continue to be mentioned, the fact that the White Sox have done such a fabulous job over the last 20 years, signing players of quality early, saving millions and tens of millions of dollars on contracts because they were identified the talent and the character of the players, sign them early.
And when you do that, you can avoid having great player auctions like the Cubs just endured by getting rid of their big-name guys who they were unable to strike long-term deals with. And so now you have a lineup only a scout could love. And that's one of the Cubs lineups we saw on Friday. Who are these guys? We'll take a closer look next inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And now the stretch. There go the runners. The pitch, a swing and a drive. Deep right field. It's got a chance. Gone. Listen to this crowd. With a game-tying home run to right, this ball game is back to even, tied 4-4.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was the voice of Pat Hughes describing the drama Friday at Wrigley Field when Andrew Romine homered off Craig Kimbrel. Everybody saw that one coming, right, Bruce? 35-year-old journeyman Andrew Romine, representative of the way the Cubs now have to produce a lineup day in and day out. I said yesterday they missed an opportunity. They should have sponsored that lineup they had gotten Google to sponsor their lineup because you had to Google almost everybody in there. Bruce, is Schwindel, Dykeman, and Romine the Cubs 4-5-6 hitters or a law firm on the north side? I mean, who are these guys?
Well, they're for them to know and for you to find out, David. They are part of what's been traded for. You saw the debut of Greg Dykeman yesterday, getting his first major league hit. A 26-year-old outfielder that came over in the deal with Oakland for Chafin. You have seen Schwindel, who came over in a trade also at 29, playing first base since Anthony Rizzo left. You saw a monster home run from him that went over 400 feet. And you're seeing Manny Rodriguez come up from the minor leagues, who throws 100 miles an hour. Sometimes they go out 102. Okay, understood. But these are the guys that you're going to see right now. And as you said, there is some age on this team, but guys like Ortega at age 30 and Wisdom at age 30 in another 2 weeks. who is to say that they're not major leaguers of quality for this era? And why I say that, David, is this era now is the era of Major League Baseball players hitting for an average of 239, which is the lowest in over 50 years, 53 years. That is close to the all-time low as well. With that in mind, some of these guys that are veteran AAA players that have been there for a long time, I think are much closer to the reality of what the major league hitter is all about at the major league level. I'm not talking about the superstar. I'm not talking about the great player. I'm talking about the average major league player. I don't think it's just the Chicago Cubs. You're looking at the White Sox, and you're looking at contributions from guys like Goodwin, guys like Hamilton, you know, showing up and being valuable members and having big moments in the major leagues in 2021. So I think it's a credit to these players' hard work, as well as it is the backing up a little bit of what the contact is and the batting average is for Major League Baseball players now.
To your point, that makes sense when you look at a team that now has Nick Madrigal and Nico Horner as their double play combination of the future. To counter your point, I don't know, Bruce, that this is what anybody signed up for. I don't think that the audition phase of the season lasting 7 weeks in 2021 is what people thought when they plunked down whatever it cost to get Marquee Sports Network for on a monthly basis. So they're not going to have a special on the Dinesh Fargus era. You know, this is not something that people...
Are you sure about that? We're keeping this tape.
I think I could be look bad, but I think that safe money is on the fact that this is an unorthodox way to go about it, but it is what it is. And then I think big picture, you have to wonder, is this what David Ross came here to do? But these are questions that we can ask the great Ron Coomer or address this topic with him, Bruce, because he is next here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.